Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the NJEDA's annual board meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press 1 then 0 on your telephone keypad to be placed in queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask Tim to read the Open Public Meeting Notice. Thank you, Chairman. Good morning. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice this meeting has been sent to Star Ledger and the Times of Trenton at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State.
Thank you, Tim. Danielle, could you call the roll, please?
Chairman Terry O'Toole?
Here.
Vice Chairman Charles Farwell?
Here.
Phil Elagia? Not here yet. He's signaling late. Maciel Medina Ferrara?
Here.
Marcia Marley?
Here.
Aisha Glover?
Present.
Joel Antoine Johnson?
Present.
Robert Shimko?
Here.
Aaron Cruz over the Authorities Unit?
Here.
State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo?
Here.
Manuel Paulino for Acting Commissioner Justin Zimmerman?
Here.
Commissioner Robert Acero Angelo from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development?
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for Commissioner Tom LaPerrette?
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Danielle. We meet today on 9/11, 23 years after the attack. I'm reminded on this day, beautiful day as it was 23 years ago, it's a solemn occasion. We think particularly of our fellow board member, Jeannie Bauer, who lost her husband on 9/11. And we're asking representatives of the NJEDA's Military Community Employee Networking Group, Barry Hirschman and Matthew Abraham, to come up and lead us in a moment of silence.
Matthew Abraham, NJEDA.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Barry Hirschman. Served proudly in the 101st Airborne Division, U.S. Army, and I currently am the HR Director for NJEDA. On this special day, I just want to take just a few moments here. 23 years ago, on September 10th, that night, 246 people went to sleep in preparation for their morning flights. 2,606 people went to sleep in preparation for work in the morning. 343 firefighters went to sleep in preparation for the morning shift. 60 police officers went to sleep in preparation for morning patrol. 8 paramedics went to sleep in preparation for their morning shift. None of them saw past 10 a.m. September 11, 2001. In one single moment, life could never be the same. So at this time, let's take prayers and blessings to the survivors, to the families and friends that we have lost, to our active paramedics that are serving today, to our firefighter community, to our police officers, to our active duty military that's protecting us now, and also to the veterans as well. Please take a moment of silence. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barry and Matthew. Moving on with the agenda, the more mundane, we need to approve the minutes from previous month's meeting. We had
do not have a meeting in August, so we go back to July. There are two sets of meeting minutes for approval today, the July 17, 2024 regular board minutes before you are the minutes from that board meeting. I kindly request that board members state their name for the record when making a motion or a second. Could I hear a motion to approve the July 17th board meeting minutes?
So moved, Angela.
Thank you. A second?
Second, Marcia Mon.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, could I hear all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the minutes are approved. Also, we need to approve the executive session meeting minutes from July 17th before you are the executive session meeting minutes from the July 17th NJEDA board meeting. Could I hear a motion to approve? Thank you. Second? Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the minutes are approved. I'll deliver some brief chairman's remarks. First of all, good morning. I hope everyone had a relaxing summer. This is, again, our first board meeting since July. We had no board meeting in August. Welcome to the NJEDA's Newark office, where we have, I think now, completely full overflow seating. And this is actually our September meeting and also the annual meeting of the NJEDA board. We'll have one agenda item to cover with respect to that in a few moments. Sitting here today presents a chance to reflect on the essential role of the City of Newark in our state's economy. It serves as a bustling home for large corporations like Prudential, Mars, Audible, and countless small businesses. It's also gained momentum as a hub for up-and-coming innovation companies, with more added to the mix thanks to things like the new Hacks Accelerator. One of the enterprises one of the centerpieces of the city's lively downtown is the NJ Performing Arts Center, NJ PAC. As one of the largest performing arts center in the United States and home to the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra, NJ PAC has been a major driver of Newark's renaissance. It serves as a great example of how arts and culture can help cities reach their full potential. Along with NJ PAC, the NJEDA has other long-term partners in Newark, all of whom share Governor Murphy's commitment to keeping Newark and all of its residents growing and thriving. I recently had the opportunity to join leadership from some of these partners, including Audible, Invest Newark, and the Newark Alliance, along with Tim and our board member Aisha, which included stops at several NJEDA-supported projects. The tour included the future site of Lionsgate, new production facility, Tubman Square, Melba's Restaurant, Equal Space, which is a diversity-focused co-working space, all of which have been approved for support under the Activation, Revitalization, and Transformation, or ART program. And now the NJEDA is helping to advance NJ PAC's continued role in the city's evolution through support from the Aspire program, approved by our board in February. This project will create more than 577,000 square feet of mixed-use space surrounding NJ PAC, serving as a touch point between the city's downtown and the new Riverfront Park. In addition, support from the NJEDA's ART program will help to enable the acquisition of land at 31 Mulberry Street for the renovation and adaptive reuse of a former Episcopal church office building, which will consist of arts-focused classrooms, community gathering spaces, and office space for NJPAC staff. Today we're thrilled to have NJPAC President and CEO John Schreiber join this meeting. He's going to share his vision for NJPAC, and we'll hear more from that in a few moments after Tim's CEO report. So now let me turn the meeting over to Tim for his CEO report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Newark. Thank you to those who were able to be here in person. I just want to echo the Chairman's remarks about the solemnity of the day of 9/11 and the poignancy of both Mark Sperry and Matt Maid. Obviously, keep everyone in their thoughts, keep everyone, particularly Jeannie and her family, in our thoughts and prayers. I am fresh back from Canada. The governor and the first lady led a really successful, quick but packed trade mission north of the border. We got to Ottawa on Saturday. We were in Toronto on Sunday. We got to Montreal on Monday. And mercifully, we got back to Newark on Tuesday. So it was a bit of a whirlwind. We had a really good trip. One of the highlights was being at the Toronto International Film Festival, or TIFF. There were seven New Jersey based or films that were made in New Jersey that either premiered or had a screening or had some big event at TIFF. We had a great reception with some of those filmmakers and some of the producers and all that. So it was a really good kind of splashy moment for New Jersey. And our momentum in film and television was very, very evident. We weren't introducing ourselves to people and saying, hey, you ought to think about New Jersey. It was much more of a, hey, we've heard New Jersey's kicking butt. How do we get to be a part of it? And that's a pretty refreshing dynamic. We did get to attend the screening of the debut of the new Bruce Springsteen documentary.
Ooh.
Yeah. I will say it was one critic. It was excellent. No, we did not get to visit with the boss. We got to visit with the governor, but not the boss. Bruce Springsteen was there. Stephen Van Zandt was there. John Landau were there. They did a little panel discussion afterwards. It was awesome. We did not. That box remains unchecked for me. We keep the hard work up. Anyway, but it was a really good trip. We had a nice engagement yesterday in Montreal at a big fintech forum talking about the accelerator program that we had this board approved. I think at our last meeting with Stephen, the fintech accelerator at Stephen Technology, was a nice tool in the toolkit to be talking about. And I think we've done six big trade missions. We've done Germany and Israel. We've done Ireland. We've done India. We've done East Asia last year. There's a quick one to Germany earlier this year, and then we had this one to Canada. Every time we're out there, our tools in the toolkit, you know, continue to be stronger and more robust. We have more to talk about, more to say that we have to offer, more evidence of momentum. And so that continues to be really, really exciting. And, you know, the governor was nonstop in selling the state, and you know, he described himself in the press as sort of the head of sales. And he was in his element doing his thing. It was a sight to behold. So it was a really good trip. But it's good to be back. I'm glad to be here advancing the business of the authority. A couple of the quick highlights, since, you know, how we spent our time since the July meeting. It's been a busy summer, and then particularly as we kind of got kicked back into gear in the fall here. We had a great event last Friday. The chairman was there. Mr. Saroangelo was there. A number of dignitaries in the New Brunswick and Middlesex communities were there. Brunswick to celebrate the topping off of Helix 1 or H1 building at Helix, which is a big deal, and hats off to the men and women of the Middlesex Building and Construction Trades. They've done an extraordinary job building that thing. They're not done. They topped it off. They got a lot of work left to do, but so far going great. But George was there. Mary was there. George was there. Kathleen was there. We had a really nice good group there. So it was a nice marker of a signature project in the innovation economy, and also evidence to the world that we can get big things done. It's a big, complex project. John will talk about getting some big things done when he's going to talk in a moment. I highlighted the Helix project in a recent letter that I wrote to a sports organization based in Philadelphia that may have caught some folks' attention. But we did, one of the things I talked about in the letter was when Governor Murphy and our team commit to getting big things done, whether that's Helix in, Helix in New Brunswick, whether that's the Windport in South Jersey, which came in completed on time and under budget for phase one, whether it's the Fort Monmouth Netflix engagement, whether that's deploying hundreds of millions of dollars to support small business, whether that's, you know, committing more than $100 million to support the child care sector. When we say we're going to get big things done, we have a track record of getting these things done. We'd like to at least one more big one on the Canada waterfront. We'll see how that all plays out. But the progress of the HEAL is going to be a signature moment in the evolution and progress on the innovation economy and getting big things done. We have a ton to get through today, so I'll be brief. I'll just put a plug in. Next week is the governor's annual conference on housing and economic development down in D.C. I'm sure a lot of folks will be there. We'll be touting all of our programs and talking about our momentum, particularly around things like Aspire and Historic and Brownfields, which we're going to just talk about progress on today. Lots of folks in the governor is there. I have that right. He just come to be the opening act, the keynote. Yeah. So he'll be there for that as well. So appreciate the chance to be here with everybody. Happy to answer any questions. I would also note it's our 50th anniversary annual meeting, so a bit of a significant annual meeting. So any questions for me before I hand it to John? Comments, observations? Great. All right. As the chairman mentioned, we have a special guest for Newark. We brought a Newark heavyweight in to give us an update on some important things that this board has been supportive of, and as well as to show generally what's going on at the PAC. So without further ado, the man who needs no introduction, really, John Schreiber.
Oh, thanks.
Anywhere you wish.
Okay.
I don't want to lose the house because I love the whole house. And, so maybe I'll just
talk
to Chairman, thank you, Jim. I'm happy to be here, and thanks for this opportunity to share a little bit about NJPAC projects that the NJEDA has supported in recent years. The EDA is going to be a remarkable partner and has been an integral part of the Arts Center since it was first imagined more than a generation ago. EDA helped to finance and build NJPAC through a state lease. And NJEDA was actually the original owner of the NJPAC complex. They leased it to the state, and then the state leased it to us. And the EDA worked with us to build One Theater Square programs at that time. You may recall the first, and this is before my time, the first announcement of One Theater Square was in 2008. It was then subsequently announced two or three more times. And then it opened in 2018, and that was a watershed. It was a market maker. It was the first ground-up residential in Newark.
Hang on a second. Hey, folks, if you're on the phone, could you remember to mute, please? Thanks.
It was the first ground-up residential in Newark in over 60 years, and it was a market maker. It is now 97% occupied. And if you look around the neighborhood, whether it is the Shack Hallett in back of us or the Verizon Tower, they are almost at full capacity. Today I'm going to highlight three transformational projects that we're working on that really wouldn't be possible without the support of the EDA. The Three City Arts and Ideas Festival in North Tishore, the NJPAC Campus Redevelopment, and the TV Film Studio in Newark, Southward Lionsgate, Newark. Before I give you those examples, it's important to keep in mind that NJPAC intentionally is the most diverse performing arts center in America in terms of its programming, its audiences, and its staff. That's something we work on every single day, and we're extremely proud of that. Last year, we reached over 720,000 people across 1,100 of them on and off our campus. This was a record audience reach of the Arts Center's history, and that is thanks in part to the second year of the North Shore Festival. Each year, additionally, we reach about 100,000 students and families and educators through our arts education and family-focused programs. Again, we have the largest arts education team in the state of New Jersey and the third largest in the country. In the last 13 years, the Arts Center's annual operating budget has grown from $20 million to $60 million, and we've drastically increased the percentage of that budget that comes from diversified earned revenue streams, and those are the projects that we're able to work with due to EDA. This represents additionally a continued growth in programming, both ticketed and free, and new initiatives that fulfill our mission. I'll start with North Shore, and that's slide, the next slide, please. Some years ago, we were proud to submit a proposal to be the producer of this new festival. That was the idea of the governor and the first lady. The idea was to celebrate New Jersey's diversity up and down the state, celebrate the great work of local artists, and present the biggest attractions in entertainment in terms of diverse talent. In year one, in Atlantic City, Asbury Park in Newark, we reached over 220,000 people. We sold $11 million worth of tickets, and we also, as importantly, created local advisory groups and selection committees to grant money to local artists and organizations to produce events. In year two, we returned to those cities this past June. We reached over 270,000 people, $15 million in ticket sales, and even more community events. We granted across those three markets almost $500,000 to local producers, creators, and arts activists. this great festival enabled the Arts Center to fulfill its mission as the New Jersey Performing Arts Center and enabled us to create deep relationships with local artists in markets that we historically had not been present in. In year three to come, we'll be in Asbury Park with North Shore Rocks in June. We'll be in Newark with North Shore Laughs and Jams. And Atlantic City, we've determined that the highest and best use of the North Shore Festival is to deliver a year's worth of community events working with local artists. We're excited to begin to work on North Shore 3. Let's go to slide 6, the aerial rendering, please. This is our new campus redevelopment that we master planned about 6 years ago and are now realizing, largely thanks to the $200 million Transformative Aspire Tax Credit Award from the EDA, as well as a $50 million tax-exempt bond from the EDA to help finance the project. The entire new campus will be completed by 2027. Tim Lazzura, who was an EDA stalwart for many years, is the Vice President of Real Estate and Capital Projects, and he's been leading this work. And we have been able to bring together a remarkable coalition of public and private partners and make this new campus possible. The Aspire Award from this board allows the Arts Center to continue to fulfill its mission of economic development, build an entire new neighborhood where none has existed before, and serve our community in useful and effective new ways. I'll show you renderings of each of the campus elements next. Let's go to the next slide, please. This is called ArtSide. We've named it that, and it's developed by LMXD and Newark developer Siri Morris. This is 350 units across a mid-rise, high-rise, and also inclusive of townhouses. 20% are affordable. There's 12,000 feet of retail space on the low-rise, on the ground floor of the low-rise there, plus a new home for WVGO, which is the world's greatest jazz radio station. Another retail spaces that will serve the new residents and audiences. Next slide, please. This is our re-architected Chambers Plaza in Essex County Green. We're grateful to Joe D. and the County of Essex for a grant that helped enable this re-architecture. This will now become, this is our front yard, it will become a more usable four-season urban park space for community gatherings, vendor marketplaces, outdoor concerts, movie screenings, and more. Some of you may know that every summer we do about 10 concerts in the summer called Sounds of the City, and that has really been the major and singular public use of our plaza. Now, with this re-architecture, it will be a four-season urban park space. We will be working with community groups to program it predictably and regularly all year round. Couldn't be more excited about that. The other thing is that we are extending Mulberry Street from Center Street to Rector Street as part of this new development. So we're reclaiming streetscape, which is important. Next slide, please.
Okay.
This is the Cooperman Center, the Cooperman Family Arts Education and Community Center. We named it that in honor of a founding gift from the philanthropist and Cooperman Cooperman. It is our new home for arts education, community engagement, arts and well-being, and we'll also have rehearsal studios to be used by professional groups as well as local artists with space plans. This is a project that pre-pandemic was a $50 million project. Post-pandemic is a $75 million project. And yet, you know, thanks to EDA and others, we are able to finance it properly. It's 58,000 square feet over three stories. It has 12 classrooms in it, 175-seat education, black box theater lab, It has a children's arts reading room on the ground floor for the youngest readers to instill in them a love of reading and literacy. And of course, on the top floor, professional rehearsal studios that will be a revenue generator for us. As Tim said earlier, part of this includes on this campus the renovation of 31 Mulberry Street, the old Episcopal building as an annex, and that was supported by an art grant that was authorized by this board, so we're grateful for that. Next slide. This is Lionsgate, Newark. The TV film tax credit program that the governor instituted very early in his tenure was the catalyst for NJPAC to imagine the studio in Newark. Before I got to NJPAC 14 seasons ago, I was in the movie business for 5 years, so I thought I knew a little something about movies, enough to be dangerous. When I got here, I called a fellow named Doug Steiner, who runs the Steiner Studios in Brooklyn, and he said, why don't you build a Steiner Studio in Newark? And he hung up on me. There is no incentive for me to do that. Give me a reason, and we can talk about it. And then thanks to Governor Murphy and this TV film tax credit legislation, which is among the most progressive in the country, the state of New Jersey and happily Newark is now a center for film production. So working with the Newark Housing Authority, with the EDA, with Robert Holmey of Great Point Studios, we were able to bring this into life. We first cleared a dilapidated 10-year vacant housing project, the Seth Boyden houses in the South Ward, that made it possible for us to consider this new investment. The studio partner program that EDA championed and enabled Lionsgate to become one and to secure their long-term lease, which allowed this project to proceed. We expect to open by December 2025, 270,000 square feet, an opportunity to create hundreds of new jobs, 70% of which will go to Newarkers, and also a film apprentice program, an internship program for young people. One needn't have a college degree in order to have a good job in the TV film industry, and so our goal here is to get as many young people as we can involved in this growing industry. I've been in conversations with Roger Leone, who's the school superintendent, about repurposing an existing school building into a high school that is a magnet for careers in film and TV. And we've talked to Montclair State University and Rutgers Newark about participating in our education programs. And NJPAC, while not operating the studio, we'll be managing community relations, and we're working with Councilman Council and residents of the South Ward to create a community benefits agreement so that the community benefits from this new facility. I think it'll be transformative for the South Ward. We believe Lionsgate will be the most economically catalytic and important project in the South Ward since the port was built. Again, none of this would happen without the active engagement and support of EDA. If you had said to me when I started years ago at NJPAC that we would be able to do these sorts of things, I never would have imagined it. So these are exciting times for Newark, for our state, and for arts and entertainment in our state through the commitment that you all and the governor have made in the entertainment business. So you may ask, what's next? What's next is we're getting in the ground on all this stuff, and we're excited that it will get going and will get built. But of course, we have ideas for the future. We need to be planful about the neighborhood around the South Ward in Lionsgate and ensure that there are assets built to meet community needs. So some sort of a market study that enables us to understand the possibilities in that neighborhood, I think, is a reasonable idea. And I have had a dream for a long time to have a 4-star hotel in this market of Newark. We are bringing in 35 CEOs from large performing arts centers around the country for a conference at the Arts Center in Newark in November, and they're all staying at the Airport Marriott. Not ideal. So anyway, if there's any way that EDA can be helpful in advancing an idea like that, we are all ears. All that said, we have a lot in front of us, and we're excited to advance this work. And I must say the responsiveness of EDA under Tim's leadership is something that we appreciate enormously. This work that we are doing is dependent on an enormous collaboration of active and willing partners, and with the governor and EDA in the lead, that's what's happening. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
Good morning.
Questions for John, comments, observations? All right. Ten more seconds on the nerve. I'll go through the details you have here. Our monthly board dashboard, as we get into the later months of the year, becomes fuller and fuller as we go. Become range of activity across a huge number of programs, a significant number of approvals. We're at $1.37 billion through the year, which ain't nothing. And so we're busy at these meetings, or busy in between these meetings, doing our best to do things the right way. I would note we had an audit of our film tax credit program, which you can see has clicked over to almost nearly $800 million of approval. In its life. We did an audit from the state auditor, part of the Office of Legislative Services. Overall, a very, very good report card. A couple things to follow up on, as there always are from audits, but generally speaking, it contained the magic words of adequate controls, good oversight, good monitoring, all that. A number of people can certainly thank you for that. But we'll talk about $1.3 billion through 9 months, 8 months, wherever it's been. Having the right controls, the right processes, the right procedures around all that is existentially important. So, time to note that.
Yes, I just note my attendance and being here, and apologize for being late. I was at our 9/11 ceremony. I was part of the program, so my apologies.
Danielle, catch you down.
Okay.
Full credit for me. Won't even mark it late. One of the other reporters. All right, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Great. I'm going to now move to the public comment section of the meeting. First, I'm going to ask Danielle Esser to share NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this board meeting.
Mr. Chairman. As stated in NJEDA's public comment policy, members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment period will be acknowledged to speak first in person, then by phone. Members of public attending by phone who are interested in
Q&A, Chandra.
AT&T, I'll cue you. We'll cue you when to open.
Right.
Let me read through my section first. Members of the public attending the meeting by phone who are interested in providing public comment can press 1 and then 0 to be registered to speak. Which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. I'll now go over NJEDA's public comment policy, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one. I'm sorry, we have background noise. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization, affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit their comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. A person may register to speak only once to ensure there's enough time for all those who wish to speak, and related documents, printed comments, or materials may be attached to an email. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time.
Thank you, Danielle. I would now like to acknowledge members of the public who wish to provide comment in the room at this time.
Anybody not all at once?
Why don't you come to the chair in the center? Gotcha.
Is your name of organization?
Not at all. Hello, everyone. My name is Ralphie Roman. I'm the Chief Operating Officer and co-founder of PeopleSpace. For those of you who do not know what PeopleSpace is, we're a Black-owned, queer-owned, LGBTQIA+-owned business that exists here in the city of Newark. We have dedicated and providing safe environments for Black, Brown, and LGBTQIA+ founders, businesses, and creatives. We have worked tirelessly at our current campus at 89 Market Street, and we are thrilled to envision a new, fully realized campus further in the city of Newark, which was referenced earlier, in the NJ PAC area and the Harriet Tubman Square. We are honored to be a recipient of the NJEDA Art Grant, recognizing the potential, the impact of the Eagle Space 550 campus on our ecosystem. However, the timeline constraints are hindering our progress. Our project is currently at a standstill due to various NJEDA-related processes. As a small business owner, a Newark citizen, and a community leader, I urge this board to address these delays. We've invested significant time and effort into our proposal and this project, and we need your support to move forward. I thank you very much for your time, and thank you very much.
I'll put a couple of quick reactions.
Absolutely.
If there are not, but all good. Good to see you. Probably good to see you. One, thanks for being here. Thanks for taking the time. Two, we love your project. We're doing everything we can. It's a great project. I'm thrilled to support it. Three, not our finest hour from a process perspective. We own that. I get that. You're not wrong about this. It's taking too long. Four, we're on it. Five, we'll get this figured out as soon as we can. I promise.
Thank you. Thank you for your listening.
Hi, how are you? I'm Rebecca Pauline Jample. I'm the co-director of Project for Empty Space in Newark. Can you just say it a little louder?
Sure.
Get it on the recording.
Sure, no problem.
I'm Rebecca Pauline Jample. I'm the co-director of Project for Empty Space here in Newark. We're an arts organization that is currently located at 800 Broad, and we were also thrilled to hear earlier this year that we are a recipient of the Real Estate Art Grant. Our project includes an expansion to create a storefront on the corner of Edison and Broad, and also to open up a space in the Ironside Building in Newark, and to create a cultural corridor that links the activity at Treat Place all the way through to MacArthur Highway with public art, streetscape improvements like lighting and safety and programming. And so I also, you know, thank you so much for the opportunity to have this expansion through this grant. We are facing significant challenges at this time because we've made commitments to stakeholders around spaces, and I just wanted to encourage some clarity around timeline so that, you know, we can be transparent with the commitments that we've made, but also that we don't see an impact on our small business in the upcoming months around those commitments.
Okay, thank you for being here. Also love your project. Oh, I haven't got a chance to visit your project, so we can give that some time. If we're in your good graces at some point once we figure this out, I would love to come visit and see, but I know about it, but I just haven't had a chance to see it up close and touch and feel it, so we'd love to do that. But we're on it. I hear you. We're going to get this figured out.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Anyone else in the room? Okay, should we go to the phone?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, for the members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1 then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. Once again, if you have a question, please press 1 then 0 at this time. And one moment for our first question. Once again, if you have a question, please press 1 then 0. And we have a question from Joshua Thug. Please go ahead.
Hello, Joshua Thug with Delta's Restaurant in New Brunswick. Thank you for taking me over the phone today. I just wanted to third the importance of moving on the arts grant. We are a proud recipient of the grant and currently have space leased at 810 Broad Street to develop a first-floor restaurant and rooftop club that will be available for Newark residents and attractions for the entire tri-state area. We are definitely facing significant challenges in regards to having to pay rent and other expenses we're incurring with the project without things moving forward. So just wanted to express the importance of expediency in getting these grant agreements closed. We currently are getting our building permit, and we're ready to get the show on the road, so to speak. So just wanted to echo the sentiments that have already been shared by the other two business owners in regards to the arts grant project.
Thanks for taking the time to call in. Appreciate it again. Love your project too. This one I get to eat at when it's open, so that's exciting. So that's an even more fun visit. It's not like, I forgot there was a club. I'm not cool enough to go to it, but we're on it. We'll figure it out.
Thank you so much. I appreciate all the hard work.
And at this time, there are no further questions or comments. Thank you. Please continue.
Okay, thanks, operator. I think we heard the message on the arts grants.
Yes, I believe we did hear.
Okay, I'm going to move now and give the, as everybody knows, I think we have committee meetings between these board meetings where we have a lot of interaction with the staff, and we like to give short reports on the committees before we move to approval of items on the agenda. I'm going to give the policy and audit committee reports. The policy committee met on August 28th and considered several items. Under economic transformation, the staff presented a request for the creation of the Offshore Wind Applied Research Fund Administration Grant Challenge, an MOU between the New Jersey Green Bank and the NJEDA for REGI funding, program updates to the NJ Accelerate Program, and a recommendation for a qualified investment under the NJ Innovation Evergreen Program. I believe we'll be considering all of those items today. Under economic security, staff presented a recommendation to approve the declination of applications under the Atlantic City Food Security Grants Pilot Program. In addition, the Audit Committee met on September 3rd to review and consider one voting item, the audited financial statements for 2023, which is the second portion of the NJEDA's annual report. People may recall we published the first version of the annual report without the audit. This is the second part of that completes the annual report. In addition, the committee heard presentations on various programs, including portfolio review and venture programs. Staff will present each voting item as part of today's agenda. So moving on with the agenda, under authority matters, I'm going to ask Danielle Esser, the Director of Governance and Strategic Initiatives, to walk us through the annual meeting information.
Thank you, Chairman. Pursuant to New Jersey EDA bylaws, each year the board is required to have an annual meeting and an annual reorganization memo. The memo asks for a few approvals. As usual, Charles Sarlo has been serving in the role as vice chairman and is recommended that the members approve Charles Sarlo to continue to serve in that role. The treasurer, Elizabeth Moyo, has traditionally served in the role as treasurer, and so the chairman is recommending that the treasurer continue to serve in that role as treasurer for the board. So the bylaws, Tim Sullivan in his role as CEO serves as board secretary, and the bylaws memo recommends he continue to serve in that role, and the memo also recommends appointment of multiple assistant secretaries. For the bylaws, we already have five candidates to leave and move throughout the year. For the annual lead memo, the chairman is reappointing chairs to each of the five members to each of the five standing committees: the audit committee, director's loan review committee, real estate committee, census committee, policy committee, and sustainability committee. In addition, the members are asked to reaffirm the appointment of Marcus Alvidi as the authority records custodian, engineer Alvarez as the assistant records custodian. The members are also requested to reaffirm the appointment of Fred Cole as the authority liaison officer. And the members are also requested to reaffirm the appointment of Allison Jones as the authority's administrative practice officer and to affirm Nicholas Falchi as the deputy administrative practice officer, using Robert Feinstein. In addition, the members are asked to approve the calendar of meetings for 2025.
And we're going to approve these as one voting item,
one
correct?
Yes.
Okay. Any questions, comments? Anyone asking for a raise? No. Let's be clear for the record, no one gets paid. any further discussion, questions? All right, so hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Elijah, a motion to approve.
Thank you, Jewel. Any second?
Second, Elijah.
Thank you, Phil. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the annual meeting resolutions are approved. Thanks, Danielle. Next, Rich, the audited financial statements for the year ending 12/31/23. Okay.
Good morning, Chairman. Thank you, and good morning, everyone. What you have before you this morning is the members' approval requested for the independent auditor's report prepared by PKF O'Connor Davies for the calendar year ending 12/31/23. I'm pleased to report that the independent auditor has expressed an unmodified opinion, which is basically a clean audit opinion without any findings for the most recently completed calendar year. And I would point out the sign-off date this year of September 10th is just about 3 months ahead of last year. So good news all around for that. As required pursuant to executive order, and I think, Chairman, you mentioned this, the auditor met with the members of the audit committee on September 3rd to do their annual review of the audit, and the committee accepted the results of the audit at that time. And also, when combined with the authority's annual report, this serves as the EDA's Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, or CAFR, that we submit to the state and fulfills the EDA's reporting requirements for 2023. And I'll defer to Tim if he has anything to add to that.
Not much. Thanks, Rich. In the grand sweep of what we do here, having a clean financial audit is sort of one of those baseline bedrock, can't do anything else without it if you screw this up kind of moment. So again, a clean, clean financial audit. Our auditors on the audit committee call refer to this organization as the most audited organization. I think they said in state government, maybe world. The race is out of it, right? We serve the public and they have rights to ask lots of questions, right? But anyway, so one of the most audited, among the most audited, organizations out there, and that's appropriate. We invest a lot of people's money, it's not our money, and so I appreciate the hard work that Rich and his team do to get us here every year.
Great. So any further questions, comments, discussions? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the adoption of the audited financial statements for the year ended 12/31/23?
Marcy Morley.
Thank you. Second?
Angela.
Thank you. Any further discussions? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the audited financial statements are approved. Moving to economic transformation, we have several items here. First, Chris, on technology business tax certification transfer program.
Known colloquially as the NOL program.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Though it's a solemn day, I will also say happy Wednesday. I'm Christopher Tyers, the Senior Innovation Product Officer on the Technology Innovation Team. Today I'm presenting the results of the 2024 NOL program. The NOL program enables approved biotechnology and technology businesses to sell unrelated profitable companies the tax offset of unused NOL, net operating loss carryover, and unused R&D tax credits to sustain and scale their operations. The NOL program is an annual program. Applications open in early May and close on June 30th each year. The NOL program may award up to $75 million in tax credits annually, of which $15 million is earmarked for companies based in innovation or opportunity zones, or companies that are certified to the state of New Jersey as minority-owned or women presence. So maximum lifetime cap of $20 million for each company participating in the NOL program. This is the 25th year of the NOL program, and it's provided significant impact for New Jersey technology and biotechnology sectors. Since 1999, NJEDA has approved more than $2.018 billion in tax benefits to more than 586 emerging technology and biotechnology companies in the state of New Jersey. In 2024, the authority received 29 applications, requesting total benefits over $110 million. Program highlights for the applications in 2024 included 13 technology companies, representing 45% of the total, 16 biotechnology companies representing 55% of the total, 10 companies were publicly traded companies representing 34%, and 19 were privately held companies representing 66%. 5 companies located in innovation or opportunity zones, 22 applicants, including Danny, me, and I, self-disclosed information evidencing applicants' diversity. 21 companies were returning participants, and 8 companies were new to the program. At this time, 26 applications are recommended for approval. These applicants requested $81,803,161 in total benefits. That number is adjusted lower because some companies requested more than their lifetime cap of $20 million. If taxation confirms an eligible amount over $75 million, the approved companies are subject to allocations based on a formula that addresses the allocation set aside for minority and business women-owned enterprises or in states of operations in an innovation zone or opportunity zone. All receive a portion of their benefit amount. Full list of companies recommended for approval is provided with location and business description. Switch to the next slide. I wanted to be able to give you some idea of impact of the program. So we have 2 companies that are returning companies. Firstly, to note that we do get a lot of good PR and press. So Business Insider has interviewed the 2 companies we're citing here. Trueport has 28 highly skilled, highly paid positions here in New Jersey. That company, in their quote, you can see they attribute their success and their ability to maintain operations to the NOL program. Next slide. And Lisata Therapeutics is a publicly traded company. They have 26 highly skilled and highly paid positions. I mention this because startup companies have a big curve to climb within their growth. NOL enables the greater success rate. NOL enables companies to sustain and scale operations. And the companies that participate in this program are very thankful and very much willing to acknowledge NOL's contribution to their growth. That concludes my prepared remarks. I'm happy to take any questions you may have.
Any questions? See all, just to, again, the companies are all in the board materials.
That is correct.
Any questions, comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments?
Okay. 2 quick observations. 1, I have no declines this year, which is a great thing, which means we'll wrap the process up sooner. You might remember that we had a company that was here, but Trenton, with an appeal sometime last year. They're actually, we told them, sorry, we couldn't help you that year, but if you reapply, you'd probably be okay. They reapplied. They're on your list here. So that's good as well. I'll also tell you, both in Canada and lots of other places, this program sells incredibly well. This program, you go like, wow. You guys do what? Cool. I should think about this. It's been a huge, it's a great, it's probably our old, other than Bonds, it's probably our oldest program. And so it's a good one.
Great. Hearing no further questions or discussions, can I hear a motion to approve?
Antoine Johnson.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. No further questions. Could all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the program approvals are approved.
And just one thing, Chairman.
Yes.
Good moment to also recognize the Treasurer and her team, particularly taxation. NOL is one of many, many programs that are kind of come here and have a public profile among us. The team in taxation spends a lot of time and is a great partner in making sure that all the machinery of all the taxation-related matters happens seamlessly and great customer service. So thanks to Liz and her team.
The next item presented by Curtis Lee is the NJ Innovation Evergreen Fund, a proposal for a qualified investment.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm pleased to present to the board our recommendation for a qualified investment funded by the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund program. The Evergreen Fund has $30.5 million of unallocated capital available to invest in New Jersey early-stage companies. The recommendation offered here today has met all program eligibility requirements. These requirements and confidential transaction details are located in your board packets. The qualified investment recommended for funding today is an application by the qualified venture firm Yax Management Company for a $400,000 investment into the Series A1 preferred stock financing round of Recover Healthcare, an innovative high-growth medical device company based in Princeton. staff will reserve an additional $242,000 for related management fee and direct administrative expenses. The Evergreen program will reserve an additional $1 million for a qualified matching follow-on equity investment. The sponsor of this application, the Access Management Company, has been approved under delegated authority as a qualified venture firm. Yax is a Mexico City-based venture firm, currently investing out of its second fund. The firm invests across several verticals within the legal cannabis space, spanning technology, biopharma, and textiles. Recover Healthcare has developed a patented point-of-care medical device that tests saliva for the presence of particular compounds or diseases. Initially, this device will be used to test for the presence of THC in saliva. THC is the psychoactive compound found in marijuana. However, this technology has the potential to expand to other testing verticals such as reproductive health, infectious diseases, and other illicit drug testing. Recover's device enables the detection of recent cannabis use within the past 8 to 10 hours, which compares very favorably to the current standard, which is a urine test, which can detect THC for 30 days or more. Therefore, this device aims to solve a problem present in workforces where employees are unfairly terminated for consuming cannabis during non-work hours. This round of funding will be used for manufacturing, sales and marketing, product research and testing, and administrative expenses. Former chair, I'll note, of the EDA, Kevin Quinn is also an investor in this company, owning in aggregate 45 basis points of the company's equity. 0.45, yes. Recover has previously benefited from their investors' participation in the EDA's Entrepreneur Support Program and the Angel Investor Tax Credit Program. As well, the company has received direct financing from CSIT grants and vouchers in the aggregate of $140,000. This qualified investment will match an investment made by Yax earlier this year and will occur on the same transaction terms. I'll conclude my remarks by reiterating our recommendation for approval of the application for qualified investment. Thank you for your consideration. I welcome any comments or questions.
This is our fourth Evergreen proposed approval, so we're starting to build up a portfolio, which is what we're hoping for, because any one of these could do really well or completely flame out, we don't know. But having a portfolio of healthy amount of bets on the New Jersey Innovation Ecosystem, I think it's a smart strategy to get to that critical mass. Maybe a four is critical mass, but it's starting to be in the neighborhood of critical mass.
Great. Any questions, comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, Murphy.
Thank you. Second?
Second, Alonzo.
Thanks, Bill. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, excuses, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Okay, thank you. Next, Sarah, on the NJ Accelerate Program.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
The memo before you is in regard to the NJ Accelerate Pilot Program approved by the Board in February 2020. With this memo, we are requesting the Board to approve one program update to the NJ Accelerate Program, a new two-year pilot period from board date, and three, the continued utilization of NJ Accelerate original funds and the delegated authority for the CEO to use $5 million coming from underutilized innovation programs. Accelerators are cohort-based boot camps for startups, offering business knowledge, mentorship, and connections to founders. New Jersey has recently seen the establishment of new accelerators such as TAC, World-Leading Part-Tech Leading Program, Clerks Digital Science Studio, focused on digital health, and NJ Task, the FinTech Accelerator CEO of Digital Technology, run by Plug and Play. As you know, both Hacks and NJ Task are NJEDA supported strategic innovation centers. Hacks and Merck Digital Science Studio are also approved under NJ Accelerate. And we anticipate an application from NJ Task in the not too distant future. The NJ Accelerate pilot period expired on September 20, 2 years after the disbursement of the first benefit. With this program, EDA engages with best-in-class accelerators across the U.S. and supports innovative startups based in New Jersey. The program provides three benefits. The first work for companies and consists of a 10-year investment loan benefit, which matches the cash investment provided by the approved accelerator, up to $150,000, anchoring the startup in New Jersey. A rent grant benefit covering up to 6 months of rent, capped at $25,000 and matching the rent at a co-working space or incubator. And the third benefit is for approved accelerators and is an event matching sponsorship to host events in New Jersey, capped at $25,000 per event for a total of $100,000. We're requesting a change in this and more to follow. As detailed in Exhibit 4, the program has gained increasing traction. To date, we have partnered with 10 best-in-class accelerators, as you can see from this slide before you. This number more than doubled just in the last year. Notable best-in-class accelerators recently approved include the Entrepreneur John Siegel Accelerator. They are known as ERA, they are based in Manhattan, they are multi-sector focused, and then MetaProp Accelerator at Columbia University, which is a world-leading PropTech program. To date, we have supported 11 startups, and the three examples include Tandem, a graduate from Hacks, a spun out of Stevens. It has developed decarbonized trucking alternatives in cold chain transportation and run a pilot with Merck. Celine Biotechnologies, a woman-led team and graduate of Merck, digital science studio that has developed a platform to drive precision targeted immunotherapy. And Collate AI, if we can go to the next slide, a graduate of ERA and a minority-owned startup accelerating pharma trials with an AI decision tool. You can see them featured here on the billboard in Times Square. Accelerate was initially capitalized with $2.5 million from the Economic Recovery Fund. With the applications today under review, and we just keep receiving them, the available funds will almost be depleted, and we have a robust pipeline of prospective applicants. Most of the funding has been deployed in 2024. Based on the numbers there are slightly changed in the meantime. So, based on the experience gained, we are requesting the board to approve some updates and refinements to make the program more efficient and impactful. And I'd like to highlight only a few, namely one, accelerators with a physical space outside the U.S. will now be eligible so that we can attract more foreign startups to New Jersey. Two, we are no longer referring to employees but to workforce, to clarify that we are not considering exclusively salaried workers, but also other types of staff and compensation, and consequently we are expanding the range of documentation confirming that. Three, that based on the average requested, we are lowering the sponsorship benefit for the accelerators to $2,000 per event and capped at $25,000 total per accelerator, and we are changing this from a sponsorship to a grant. And then finally, we're restructuring the rent benefit. With this change, workspaces will be approved under Accelerate and no longer under the NG Ignite program as it was before, and the rent benefit will be awarded directly to the company and not to the workspace as before. This concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
So just to be clear for everyone, we're really three things we're considering. One is extending the time, two is additional capital, another program.
For $5 million,
yes. And there's some program updates.
Right. Can I ask a question about the update to the documentation available for appointments? I'm just trying to just talk about why we don't have the 99 workers to be covered under this, and just give me some sense of the size of these companies and why, as written here, it's not a normal thing for folks, or it's rare for folks to
absolutely.
Be
Commissioner, I'm happy to get on that one. This is one of our earliest stage programs. What we have found in running the pilot is that many of the companies don't have very limited resources, and they are often compensating employees with ownership in the company and paying them a 1099 statement. What happens then is they elevate once they raise their first institutional round, generally around $1 million round, and bring everybody on as a W-2 employee. And if you look at our program timeline that we support the innovation economy with, the next program that you would see in your life cycle requires W-2 employees. And the angel investor tax credit that we work with taxation requires 75% W-2 employees in New Jersey. the Angel Match Program requires of you to. So as a way to anchor these companies that are coming out of these accelerators into New Jersey, we think this change is important in a very short window of time for the companies. Most of them have one or two employees, very small employees.
For your revenue.
How do we keep that from, you know, oh, now it's 99, now I can just keep them on 1099 going forward, or trying to figure out what are the guardrails to make sure that they are taking that next step and making them employees, and secondarily, and I'm sorry for not knowing if it's lived up, but, you know, is there a separate 1099 that's about ownership as opposed to just a regular 1099 you can come as an independent contractor?
My understanding is, in terms of corporate, 1099 is consistent across the board. But again, because these companies are so starved for cash, they tend to participate in multiple programs with us. So you heard from Recover, Curtis on Evergreen, they have participated in half a dozen programs with the EPA. They can't continue in their life cycle with the EPA if they don't have W-2 employees. So we believe this is the on-ramp, but because of the other program requirements, it's also generally a requirement when the Series A round comes in from the investor.
So for the 1099, that's signifying ownership of some sort. Is there any other kind of documentation that when the 1099, they also have to show this, that shows they're part owners, not just being misclassified as independent contractors?
Yes, we all have part of their cap table,
so
we know exactly what.
Okay, so someone's on 1099 and they're not on that cap table, they're not going to be qualified, it's not going to be a qualifying employee.
As it's right now, they would be coming to us whether or not they would receive some compensation through ownership versus 1099. So that's the program design is written.
I also want to add that there are two different requirements in the program. One is to have two founders, C-suite executives in New Jersey working full-time for the company, and this is a mitigating a risk rule so that we can reduce the risk of this company going out of business or leaving New Jersey. And then we also require that 50% of the workforce is in New Jersey, but oftentimes these two things are one and the same. So we only have the founders. And so the requirement is that they are founders for C-suite, and that's verified through cap table, job profile, office ledger.
I appreciate that. That's often, because I'm always worried about the edge case and the slippery slope. I'm going to vote to move forward on this because it's a great concern to be expanding our definition of what's allowable as any kind of plumbing training programs. I appreciate this is a smaller program, beginning stage. I just want to make sure we're not expanding this to other of our programs, because this is one of the most important things about our economic development programs in New Jersey, that we care about the workforce. And I'm always proud to say that we have the strongest worker protections of any tax incentive program in the country, bar none. So anytime we're chipping away at that, I get a little concerned. Good luck. Thank you.
Any other comments, questions? Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? Okay, could I hear a motion to approve?
Antoine Johnson.
Thanks, Jewel. Second?
Second, Charlotte.
Thanks, Charles. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Recusals or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Next up is an MOU with the NJ Green Bank for REGI funding. Sean Solomon.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm here to present a memo requesting that the board approve the execution of a Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, with the New Jersey Green Bank. This MOU would allow for the transfer of $50 million of regional greenhouse gas initiative funding, otherwise known as REGI, from the NJEDA to the New Jersey Green Bank. REGI is a multi-state market-based program that establishes a regional cap on carbon dioxide emissions from the electric power generation sector, allowing for the auctioning of emission rights, traditionally referred to as a cap-and-trade or sometimes cap-and-invest program. use of RESI dollars by the NJDA is governed in part by a three-year strategic funding plan that outlines how RESI funds are to be utilized by the various state government agencies involved. The 2020 to 2022 strategic funding plan included initiative four, create a New Jersey Green Bank that directed the NJDA to use RESI dollars to fund the capitalization of a new statewide green bank. The New Jersey Green Bank was formally established as a subsidiary of the NJDA this past spring, with a mission of focusing exclusively on climate investments and financial support to attract private capital and enable the state to reach its climate goals. If approved, the New Jersey Green Bank will deploy the $50 million to provide financial support through debt, credit enhancements, other financial vehicles in areas such as zero-emission transportation, building decarbonization and resiliency, and clean energy generation and storage. The New Jersey Green Bank will be solely responsible for administering $50 million and will report to the NJEDA on a quarterly basis on the status and uses of the funding. In sum, this MOU and funding transfer to the New Jersey Green Bank will assist the authority in meeting its obligations under the 2020 to 2022 strategic funding plan and further empower the Green Bank to grow the state's clean energy economy while helping New Jersey meet its state climate goals. Thank you for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I may, so you may be wondering, we haven't heard much about the Green Bank in a while since we formed it. Just in the spring, we had our first two meetings. It's been principally organizational. We've been doing bylaws and committees and all that fun stuff. So there have been no transactions, been no projects as of yet, but this this move would enable us to say we've got nearly $100 million balance sheet, also large hope for federal funding that is coming down the pike. It's still going down the pike. It's not coming down the pike yet. Complicated right now. We'll figure that out. But anyway, we will have a sizable amount of capital to deploy in the Green Bank world.
Do we know what the amount of federal funding is?
We think it's around $100 million. It's a pretty complicated situation. The President will spare you the details of, but we think it's about $100 million. The case involves federal procurements and appeals and some things we're familiar with here as well. So it's a bit tricky.
Any further comments, questions? Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? Hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve? Thank you. Second? Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, Lloyd Lomelino on Offshore Wind Applied Research Administration Grant Challenge.
Good morning. I'm here to request approval for the creation of the Offshore Wind Applied Research Fund Administration Grant Challenge, approval of delegated authority to approve individual applications to the Grant Challenge and accept additional funds into the program if they are made available, and a fee waiver for the Grant Application Challenge. This program will provide $6.35 million to an administrator to develop and manage a sub-grant program available to New Jersey colleges and universities to conduct applied for offshore wind energy technologies. The $6.35 million comes from two separate grant agreements between the EDA and the Department of Treasury from FY23 and FY24. And any additional funding into this program may come from offshore wind developers, original equipment manufacturers, or startup incubators or accelerators with interest in advancing offshore wind technologies. The grant challenge will be open to nonprofits with prior experience managing and overseeing offshore wind research and development solicitations. And as mentioned, the subgrants will be open to New Jersey colleges and universities. This grant challenge will support the Wind Institute's objective to advance offshore wind research innovation by investing in our New Jersey universities and colleges through the subgrant program. This investment will directly support advancements in focus areas with high market potential and commercialization for the offshore wind industry, including climate smart modeling, environmental impact assessment, transmission and grid integration, power to X and energy storage, and offshore wind component design. The EDA is requiring that the administrator caps their overhead and indirect costs at 12%, or $762,000 of the $6.35 million grant that's available to them. That would leave $5.58 million of funds available to the New Jersey universities and colleges for conducting the applied research projects. EDA will receive their applications and review and rank them based on their previous experience developing offshore wind research solicitations, their proposal scorings and methodologies, and their approach for managing the subgrant programs. The grant administrator will be responsible for entering into a grant agreement with the EDA and overseeing all aspects of the subgrant programs. She'll be developing and managing the competitive solicitations and the process for the subgrant program, scoring and awarding proposals, and managing the subgrant awards and all their contracts. In closing, staff is requesting approval to create an offshore and applied research fund administration grant challenge to find a qualified administrator to run a subgrant program available to New Jersey colleges and universities to conduct offshore wind technology applied research. Can answer any questions? It's time.
What would you expect the timing to be? How long will it take to find the administrator?
We're hoping we can get through the application process within 30 days and find someone before December.
Any other questions? Comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Yes, Marcia.
Second?
Elijah, second.
Thank you, Phil. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Could I ask Vice Chairman Sarlo to give a brief Real Estate Committee report?
Thank you, Chairman. The Real Estate Committee met on August 28th to review one item on the agenda. It was a recommendation to approve a grant under the Atlantic City Revitalization Grant Program. Staff will present more details for the Board's consideration. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Charles. So next up is the Atlantic City Revitalization Grant Award by Christina Fuentes.
Good morning.
Probably woke up at 4 in the morning to be here for this meeting.
So just a quick recap of this program. The Atlantic City Revitalization Grant Program really supports capital improvement projects. We had federal funding up to the $19.65 million. This is our fifth award that we're potentially doing with a balance of $2.9 million left to utilize. Basis of this is the grant covers 50% of those costs, hard and soft construction costs. They do have site control, but also the project has to fulfill because it is COVID funding, the fact that they're supporting small business support efforts, clean and safe efforts, food insecurity efforts, downtown vitality efforts, and job and space creation, office space creation. Next slide. This approval is for Caring Inc., which is a nonprofit that's been based in Atlantic County for 40 years. They do, they provide support housing programs and services to seniors and disabled adults. They have developed over a dozen housing projects as well, too, but Caring Inc. right now is based with their headquarters on Iowa Avenue in Atlantic City, so those who may not be familiar with it, it's literally right next to Tropicana and the Tony Pollard Memorial as well, too. So as you can understand, there's a lot of tourists and people walking through these areas, and they're really invested in trying to improve this neighborhood where their headquarters is based. So this will allow them to expand into the 2,866 square feet, allow them to add 9 new jobs as well, too, but also like really repair their parking lot, the facade, their dumpster area, where unfortunately there's a lot of negative activity that may happen there, so they really want to have a clean and safe initiative that's really to support the area. They also, if you walk around the corner, it's a couple-minute walk from their headquarters, they picked up a vacant and blighted building, which was a former rooming house. So they're able to renovate that, and they're going to turn it into really a short-term rental, so similar to an Airbnb concept, but first floor would have commercial space as well, too. So they'll meet all those criteria as well. So on the third floor will be 4 bedrooms, second floor will be common space, but then first floor is commercial space with 1 studio unit in the back as well, too. Total project costs will be over $5.2 million, so our grant will support 50% of those at 2.6. And this project will address the downtown vitality efforts, small business support efforts, and also job and space creation, just because of the fact they're taking a blighted building, repairing it, really, you know, all the necessary items that are needed for downtown vitality in Atlantic City. So the recommendation, because they have proof that they have the other 50% of costs, they can enter straight into the grant agreement with EDA, and we would support the project for the over $2.6 million.
So after this, you're left with, like,
$100,000 or how
much? $2.996 million, I think it was, and that will be the last award that we do for the next project.
Okay. So after this, we can give you like $2.9 million.
Yep. And then, thank you. So you can see currently on the right, that's what their headquarters looks like. On the left is the space they're expanding into, and then that's the dumpster area as well that I was referencing. But as you can see, just, you know, next slide, we essentially repaired that. So as people are walking through, it would be a little bit more repaired and just, like, more attractive to the eye. And then the next slide will show you what the rooming house looks like. And to the right, parking lot that they'll be repairing as well. This is off Pacific Avenue, so having that parking lot is really vital to also if you're going to attract tenants that are going into the commercial space, but also the people renting the upstairs floors as well, too. And allows them to really, you can literally just walk over to Tropicana. You know, you can do whatever you want. Not too far from the boardwalk as well. So, and the next slide will show what that parking lot looks like as of today. So if you drive by today, this is what it looks like. And then the next slide will show you the renderings for what it will potentially look like. So, I'm really happy to take questions.
So was there a time deadline on utilization of the funds?
Yeah, it's federal, so everybody has to provide a construction time frame. This is more of a renovation, so they feel confident that it can handle it.
But is the whole program with your remaining funds
absolutely
there? What's
yeah
the end of 26?
It's the end of
calendar. Any comments, questions? If we build John Schreiber's four-star hotel, she could have stayed there last night.
True. I did talk in my intro to the meeting to talk about kind of same large-scale projects. Those are important. We love those. That's what I talked about. But this program is a great example, too, of being surgical and tactical and comprehensive, particularly in a city like NYC that needs lots of interventions, lots of small things adding up to big things. This is a great example of that. So thanks for being
here. Great. Any comments, questions? Anyone on the phone? Comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Thank you. Second?
Second, Elijah.
Thanks, Phil. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Atlantic City Food Security Grants Pilot Program, Rusha.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I am here on behalf of the team, our food security team, requesting members to approve declinations for the Atlantic Food Security Pilot Grant Program. But before we go into the declinations, I kind of just wanted to give a quick recap of what this program is and also highlight some of the applicants, 11 applications that have been approved under delegated authority for this grant program. And also to note, September is actually Hunger Action Month, so quite excited to present the 11 ones that received the funding. So if you go to the next slide, please. The first 11 are the ones that have been approved under delegated authority for receiving a grant under this program. And while this slide doesn't capture what exactly they'll be doing, I can give a quick update on the scale. Some of them are the traditional, or some people call it transaction food at this place, like food pantries, where any resident in Atlantic City can go and receive their weekly or bi-weekly supply of meals. But then we have some such as the Ideal Education, or in this case, even the Bangladesh Association of South Jersey, where they will be providing access to food, but it's a big transformation in the sense that they will be creating job opportunities for local residents of Atlantic City to learn how to run a co-op, that's through ID education, and through Bangladesh Association, learn how to grow their own produce, and then also bring that produce to their market and sell that produce. To note, Mighty Writers and Ideal Education were part of the Atlantic City's food security planning grant effort. So the city received funding from us very early on to figure out what to do with two distressed assets within Atlantic City and how could those be repurposed for improved food access. So Mighty Writers will be focusing on turning a bakery that hasn't been in use for several years and opening up a food pantry, and Ideal Education will be utilizing a warehouse that hasn't been used and hasn't been used for several years and opening a multi-purpose kind of a food hub, one which will include a co-op. Second floor of that would include a hydroponic farm, and there will also be a back food distribution site as well as a rooftop dining. So while, you know, we have a very traditional approach as well as some that are piloting different ways of addressing food insecurity and strengthening food security for Atlantic City, we feel very confident that these 11 awardees or grantees will be helping us achieve the goal that we had set forward through this pilot grant program. That brings me to the other part of this funding scheme, which isn't necessarily my favorite part, but a part that we have to go through. I am requesting the board to approve the designation for six of these applicants, so 129 all the way through Giordano's Gardens. Several reasons, one being that this program was a competitive grant program, so we had to score all applications based on the approved scoring guidelines that we had. Also, we were very focused on only scoring those applications that were A, complete and met the program eligibility. So we will be declining two applications, we have deemed two applications incomplete and they will be rejected without a right to appeal. And then one application did not meet applicant eligibility, which was they have to currently serve the city of the residents in Atlantic City, and they don't. So they will be declined for non-discretionary reason under delegated authority with the right to appeal. The 17 applications of the 20, after we removed the ones that were declined for incomplete or not meeting the eligibility, were scored on a criteria that was pre-approved by the board. So one was project description and statement of work, their work plan, their organization capacity, how well engaged are they with the community, and then their budget and budget narrative. Being a competitive program, we had five EDA members, staff, review these and score these applications. Each application was reviewed by three different staff members and scored based on the criteria that I mentioned. So after we scored the 17 application, we have, from our $5.25 million pilot program, we can fully fund the first 11, and for the four, so 129, Rafiq's Grocery, Friends of Jean Rester, and Pizza Daily Grind, we don't have enough funding to fund them fully. So we are requesting the board to approve the destination as we don't have sufficient funding. Two of those, Resby Freelon and Giordano Farms, can meet the minimum 50 points, so they will not be moving forward for an award. After we've done the approvals, the declinations, we still have $135,000 left, which we are requesting the board to allow us to use this for future food security grant programs, which we are working diligently to bring to the board in the coming months. We'll be funding that program, which is the expanded approach of this same approach what we took for Atlantic City, but for our other food desert communities, using the proceeds from the tax credit option that we have. With that, I am my remarks and open for any questions, comments.
Have we actually disbursed the funds?
We haven't. We are waiting for the board to approve the declinations, and then we'll proceed forward.
Essentially what we did, you just took the funds allocated and allocated it down until you ran out.
Yes.
Based on the scoring.
Yes.
And what was the average ask if you didn't, you have roughly 100,000 left, right?
So we haven't, we set the program in such a way where the minimum funding request would be 50,000, the maximum would be 500,000, and this was a program intentionally designed to be very unrestricted, so you could ask funding for salaries, for construction. You couldn't purchase land or purchase a building, but everything else as it relates to food security was an approved allowable expense. So most of them went for the maximum amount of 500,000.
Can I ask a question? The Bangladesh Association ranked higher than other ones but got less. Is that, did they ask for less?
The amount, the 329.
Yeah.
So yes, one of the other requirements was that if they had construction, they had to meet the construction eligibility of our program. They couldn't find a contractor who would pass our eligibility, so they asked us to not fund their construction fees. They would fund it themselves. So deducting the amount that was allocated for construction, the balance is what they're getting.
My question was similar. The grant amount reflects what they, other than the situation like you just referred to,
yeah,
reflects what they asked,
yes,
for. Okay.
Is that true for the last one as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's safe to say that the six that we're declining all the 100 is less than the one.
Yes. So
given the option to reduce their ask.
We didn't give an option to reduce the ask. It was only if you didn't, could not meet one of the requirements, and you decided that you didn't want us to fund that portion. And the way our board memo has been written, he said that we only fund projects fully, not partially. We don't have enough funding for the other.
One last set of comments for consideration. One, great job, Rich, as always. Two, just situating this a little bit, I recall in this very room, I think, last time we were in this room for a board meeting, in response to a pretty strong directive, Governor Murphy, to step up our game, particularly around Atlantic City food security. This is in the wake of the second, I think, or possibly third collapse of an effort to develop a full-scale grocery store in Atlantic City. The governor said, we'd keep working on that, everybody, but let's not wait 5-10 years until there's could be more interventions in the number two food desert community in our ranking. So some of those relief efforts and intermediate efforts and huge tip of the cap to Tara in the back row there started as early as last fall with some mobile grocery delivery, which was really well received. We also were going to do some more pilot programs and grants that were going to attempt to affect some system change and capacity expansion on sort of, again, a smaller, more granular kind of block-by-block scale. And that's what we're here doing today. And as Richard previewed, I think that's hopefully going to take that show on the road to the next 5 or 10 of the highest rated food deserts as well, but that's not for your consideration today. That's coming soon to a board meeting near you, but the idea here is to kind of prototype it here, take it to the next set of food deserts across the state. Camden ranks number one. Camden ranks number one. Camden, Patrick, Taylor City, somewhere on that list. It's not a good list to be on. So, yeah. But coming soon. Probably next board. Let's do this one first.
Okay. Any further comments, questions? Anyone on the phone? You're hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve? We're approving the declinations, just to be clear.
Approvals are on our behalf.
Yes,
why not?
Okay, a second, please.
Second, my hand.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the declinations are approved. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'm next going to give the Incentives Committee report as Ginny Bauer is unable to be here today. Brief report, the committee met on August 28th and considered several items. Staff presented a request to approve the Phase 3 of the New Jersey Manufacturing Voucher Program, which we'll hear about in a second. Under the Economic Transformation, staff presented a request to approve applications under the Technology Business Tax Certification Transfer Program and one application under the Digital Media Tax Credit Program. Staff also presented one Aspire application recommended for approval, which will be presented today. Lastly, staff presented a request to approve a Historic Property Reinvestment Tax Credit Award for a project in Atlantic City. So moving on to the specific items under incentives, the Manufacturing Voucher Program, Luke.
Good morning. Good morning, and members of the board. We kindly request your approval for the New Jersey Manufacturer Voucher Program Phase 3. So NJMVP 3 will continue to provide New Jersey manufacturers a reimbursable grant to access equipment that they need to become more efficient, productive, and profitable. The program aims to provide grants to New Jersey manufacturers within targeted industries or for advanced manufacturing equipment acquisition. Another $10 million from the 2025 budget has been allocated to fund MVP3. majority of the requirements, eligibility requirements for the most part, remain the same from phase one and two. Equipment grants will range from 30 to 50% of the eligible project cost, up to a maximum of $250,000 as a reimbursement. The program does offer stackable bonuses for businesses located in opportunity zones, businesses owned by women, minorities, or veterans, businesses that have an active collective bargaining agreement, as well as equipment purchased from a New Jersey manufacturer and or assembler. As I mentioned, the eligibility requirements for the most part are the same. Tax clearance certificates and sister agency checks will be required, confirming that the business is not a home-based business. Applicants must be seeking assistance for a project that they are actively contemplating but not have committed to. And applicants are allowed to procure new and or used manufacturing equipment that will be installed in a New Jersey location. For phase three, we are requesting to include the following provisions to ensure equitable access to funding. Phase three applicants will be prioritized for phase three applications for new applicants who have not been previously awarded grants under phase one or two based on EIN during the initial two-week application period. And then following that period, all eligible businesses will have the opportunity to apply for funding subject to available resources. Next slide, please. A little bit of background. Phase one.
Make the pot call.
There was a lot to fit in there. A little background. Phase 1 originally approved on October 12, 2022, with a total allocation of $33.7 million. Phase 2 was approved on September 12, 2023, with a total allocation of $20 million. And that was oversubscribed within 24 hours of application launch. Happy to report that as of August 31st, the NJEDA has approved that for a total of 325 companies across phase one and two of the program. Phase one has 205 approved applications with a total of roughly 28.8 million in approved awards, of which almost 9 million has been dispersed at August's conclusion. Phase two, 120 companies approved with roughly 20.8 million in approved awards, and almost 10 million in disbursements. For context, New Jersey manufacturers spend roughly $4 for every one that they have been awarded by the authority. And to share how prudent, you know, this program has been for the manufacturing community, I'd love to read some testimonials. The first one would be from a small business specializes in industrial manufacturing in Watchung. They are actually recipients of awards from phase one and two totaling roughly $184,000. We here at L&T cannot tell you how excited we are to see this program coming around again. It was so beneficial to our business last year and hope that we will have the same opportunity to grow and strengthen our company in New Jersey. I would just like to tell you how valuable the grant was for us last year and the new opportunities this next one will present. All of this would not have been achievable without this program that you and your team have put together. After receiving the grant last year for the advanced hard milling machine, L&T was contracted to manufacture a new stamping die for another New Jersey-based company. In the past, tolerances required would not have been achieved with the machines that they currently had. By having this machine at our facility, we were awarded the business. The part was manufactured on this new machine, and additional orders are underway for more work to flow through the machine. In the past, these parts would have been manufactured somewhere else. I thought it was important to write to you today, as the grant has been a great success story for both our company and New Jersey. Another one from TriPower Design, a small business that specializes in the life sciences, headquartered out of Denville. The purchase of the vertical axis milling machine utilizing the MVP program enabled us to remain competitive in the industry we serve, which is engineering, medical device component manufacturing, light manufacturing, and industrial automation. Moreover, it has allowed us to remain in the state of New Jersey, where both the founders of TriPower, Tony and I, were born. With the new machine, we increased sales, with our key medical device customer by an estimated 30%, created one new job, and elevated our existing positions to higher pay. By virtue of the MVP grant, we estimate that we are 15% more productive with just this one acquisition. We believe it has enabled us to outpace our overseas competitors through the use of advanced machining technologies together with innovative human solutions, which we provide as an everyday service. And last but not least, we will talk about Baumgartner Finishing Companies, a women-owned business specializing in manufacturing located out of Egg Harbor Township. Investing in advanced finishing technology has significantly boosted our operational capabilities, resulting in a 22% increase in output. The growth has enabled us to hire three new employees and promote one team member to a higher paying role. The enhanced precision and speed of our processes has also improved our marketing competitiveness, allowing us to better serve our local community and outperform international rivals. And that will conclude my remarks.
I may have said this, but like in the phase two of 120 companies coming through, how many apply?
I do not have that specifically. I would have to.
But were the people who applied who did not get
there? There are still waitlisted applicants that we are working through.
So no one was rejected. They just were waitlisted.
No, there have been companies that have been rejected. There's just a significant amount of waitlisted applicants.
Nobody got rejected for lack of money. Some got rejected because they didn't
qualify. Yeah, well, it's funny. So
the ones that are waitlisted have to reapply for phase three now?
No. Those are waitlisted for phase two.
You still have money in phase two. Not that.
But they could choose to withdraw and apply to phase three if they want, right? I think that's another question rather than waitlist.
Absolutely, that is a possibility.
I don't know why you want to. You could. I agree with the theoretical possibility. I don't think I'd be willing.
You can stay on the wait list and apply for phase three?
You have to withdraw, reapply. How do they know there's going to be money allocated in phase two? Like if they, this opens up, I don't know when it's going to open up tomorrow, I'm saying, right? If you're wait listed on phase two and you don't know if there's money allocated for you, when do you want to withdraw and say, I'm going to be the first in phase three? Dr. Abraham?
Yeah. So what we've done is we've allowed rollover. So we're able to roll over from phase one funds into phase two. So we're pulling folks from the wait list. We're actually calling them, asking them if they want to continue to move forward with their acquisition and their grant. And that's how we're moving all the wait listed folks through. We believe we could fulfill all of the phase two wait listed applicants.
From existing phase two funds or...
From phase one funds that were not used. So there are folks that were in phase one that didn't move forward with all their equipment acquisitions, so we're able to.
And we only pay out once they've spent the money, right?
That's right. And they have to get delivery, installation, and show us proof of that.
In January.
January for phase three is what we're shooting for.
So that window of time will work through that.
This is a very popular program, right?
Yeah, the testimonies are great. It took a while to get through them, but it was...
You read
perfectly. Hey, there's a lot to get through. You talk about productivity, job creation, wage enhancement, outpacing international competitors.
They're buying sophisticated machines.
Yeah,
they are. These aren't,
So very cool. Talk about manufacturing. Still, a quarter million people still work in manufacturing in Jersey. It's not as large a sector as it used to be, but still a quarter million people put food on the table every night from manufacturing industry. I remember this was the first sustained period of manufacturing job creation since they started keeping stats on that in the 60s in New Jersey. So there's a lot going on.
It seems to take some time to get through.
It
takes not paying well the first fund from phase two is small, right?
Yeah, so the timeline for both our suppliers is taking a little longer to acquire their equipment. So we have to wait, and we only have one disbursement. So if there's multiple pieces of equipment, they have to wait to receive multiple pieces before they come in.
They can choose to paid on only one of the pieces of equipment rather than all of them.
But yeah, mostly supply chain issues or waiting on applicants to get it installed and get delivered and
sounds like a great
Any further comments, questions? Anyone on the phone? Comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve? Thank you. Second?
Antoine Johnson.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion is approved. Good luck. Next, we have an Aspire Award. Kudra.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Yes. I am going to present to you an approval for Oasis at Great Bay LLC, but I would like to first inform you that NJEDA has received from NJHMFA a request for commitment, request for action commitment for this project at their September 26th board. And in terms of agency approval, sometimes agencies will go first for their approval, and sometimes we will go first, which is the case in this month. However, we work very closely together and in tandem with the credit offices on these projects. The product team is seeking approval to award $11,570,732 in Aspire tax credits for 100% affordable non-senior project in Summers Point. The project is specifically located at 901 Mays Landing Road in Summers Point, New Jersey. It's also known as Great Bay. On the left side, the first picture there shows the golf course, the Great Bay Golf Course, which is directly across from where the development will be built. And in the middle, you have the vacant land where the development will be placed and a rendering that was provided by the applicant. The applicant is proposing the ground-up new construction of 2 3-story low-rise buildings with 43 residential rental apartment units, which includes 5 special needs units for homeless individuals. The project unit mix includes 8 1-bedrooms, 25 2-bedrooms, 9 3-bedrooms, and 1 2-bedroom superintendent unit. The affordable housing development is in the Recreational Planned Unit District in Summers Point, and is, as I mentioned, directly across from the historic Great Bay Country Club. The Great Bay rental units have an affordability level to persons earning 60% or less of the area median income, and the board memo also provides information for the affordable units and income levels. This project also includes 86 parking spaces, 4 of which will meet ADA accessible route to entrances and other location requirements. The project is owned by a single-purpose entity, Oasis at Great Bay, LLC, an entity wholly owned by Michael Sawyer, who is the principal of JAS Group Enterprises, Inc., which is also the lead development entity. JAS is also the general contractor for the project. As is the case with most low-income housing tax credit finance transactions, an investor member will enter into the partnership at financial closing at a 99.99% limited partner, with Michael Sawyer reverting to a 0.01% general partner and assuming the role of managing member. The co-applicant for this project is Triple C Housing and is a verified nonprofit 501c3 entity that will provide services to the project's residents, such as life skills training, supportive services, as well as assisting individuals and families with health care support and other overall social well-being resources. The co-applicant will also serve in this process for this project of financial support related to the monetization of the Aspire tax credits. The board memo also provides more information about the tax credit sales and ownership and the co-applicant on this project. A legal review was completed on the applicant, the co-applicant, and related entities by the authority, and all entities were cleared. Sister agency checks was also completed for all entities by the authority and received clearances from those agencies as well. The new buildings will include modern amenities throughout and will comply with the New Jersey HMFA Energy Star Homes Program requirements for the New Jersey Energy Star multifamily new construction, which also satisfies NJEA's green building standards. The total development budget, next slide, please. The total development budget is $21,246,587, and to help size the award, we excluded costs that are prohibited by legislature and program rules, bringing the total development eligible cost basis to $19,284,554. The Aspire requires the developer to contribute at least 20% equity, which in this case, for this development, the required equity is roughly $4.2 million, to be exact, $4,249,317. And in this case, the developer is contributing $7,844,587, which is well above the minimum requirement. The sources table also shows that there's other sources of debt and equity funds in the deal, and we further subject the applicant's request to the program's various award caps. And in this case, the project is eligible to receive up to 60% of the total eligible cost, or $90 million, whichever is less. And so based on those factors, we are recommending an Aspire award of $11,570,732 for board approval today. And that concludes my remarks, and I'm happy to take any questions if there are any.
Any questions, comments? Anyone in the room or on the phone, questions or comments?
Is there first Aspire in Atlantic County, is that right?
Or we can't get here. Either one is the first.
Atlantic County, yeah.
Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
So moved, Sarlin.
Thank you. Second?
And Mike Johnson.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the Aspire Award is approved.
Thank you.
Moving next, Madam Chairman, I'm going to be remiss if I didn't give a shout-out and a thank you to Kevin Schmidt, who leads the Aspire program, and has done lots of things over his career at EDA, who is sadly moving on from us. This is probably your last board meeting, so give a shout-out and appreciation.
You might want to come back as just a public observer.
He may have come public other times.
I now, one item I want to make a note as compared to our published agenda, the film tax credit request from Broadside Production has been withdrawn. So the next item on the agenda we will consider is the digital media tax credit award request from CNBC. Chris?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Chairman. EDA staff has completed a review and recommends the approval of one digital media project submitted by CNBC LLC for their qualified digital media production expenses for their fiscal year 2020. We received written confirmation from an outside firm hired to review submitted budgets to make sure they're reasonable for industry standards, which total qualified spend for this project over just over $46.4 million, and the total credits considered for this recommended approval is $13,920,681. Thank you, and happy to answer any questions.
Any comments, questions? Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
Antoine Johnson.
Thank you. Second? Thank you. Any other discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the award is granted. Next is Historic Property Reinvestment Program. Steta.
Who gets to say good morning, Ms.?
I know. Technically still morning. Look him up. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Um,
So today I'm here to recommend an award under the Historic Property Reinvestment Program to the Atlantic Loft Urban Renewal Entity, the not-to-exceed amount of $8 million for the Atlantic Loft Rehabilitation Project in Atlantic City. The recommendation for the award is based on a total project cost of $22,487,000 and eligible cost of $17,973,035. Awards for the program are calculated based on a percentage of eligible costs, and since this project is located in Atlantic City, their eligibility is they can receive up to 45% up to a maximum of $8 million of the project's eligible cost. So due to the eligible cost of the project, they're actually capped at the maximum $8 million. The project consists of the rehabilitation of an existing 8-story building, which was originally opened in the early 20th century as a professional office building. It's been turned into residential and commercial space. Recently, the occupancy of the building, they have had tenants on the first floor, commercial tenants on the first floor, but the upper floors have been mostly vacant for over a decade at this time. The project will result in the creation of 56 residential units, including a new roof deck, and they will return commercial space in the first floor. The application has confirmed that at least 20% of the newly created units will be low and moderate income with affordability controls as required under the program. They are expecting to complete the project in a single phase with a duration of 24 months. The building, which again, I believe opened in 1927, has been identified as historic by the Atlantic City Historic Preservation Committee. Commission, and because they are a certified local government, their designation meets the requirements for historic designation under the program. The applicant is a subsidiary of Odin Properties LLC, which was founded in Philadelphia in 2009, and they're a full-service developer with primary investments in multifamily real estate. They have completed projects including apartment renovations, ground-up construction, gut renovations, historic rehabilitations, and finishes upgrades across 14 U.S. states. The co-applicant for the project is Odin Forward, which is a nonprofit organization that was incorporated in 2021. And as part of their participation agreement between the applicant and the co-applicant, they are slated to provide services for building tenants and community residents. That will include provisions of health and medical services by third parties, providing information about social services and benefits from the city, state, and the federal government, and coordination of transportation needs, so for example, to the grocery store, doctor's visits, healthcare stores, and the like. The application was reviewed by a number of different reviews, including sister agency, legal, underwriting review. We also had a full review of all the project costs, including eligible costs, proposed construction schedule, as well as scoring by scoring committee. Sister agency and legal review identified no issues. The review by the scoring committee was based on the program's pre-established scoring criteria. The criteria focuses on five main components, which are historic significance, imminent threat to the historic resource, project concept and team, status of site control, and impact on the surrounding neighborhood. As part of the project concept and team review, the scoring committee scored the applicant based on information submitted regarding the project's demonstrated experience. The documentation reviewed included information on experience and qualifications of the applicant entity, as well as individual team members. And based on the information review, the applicant demonstrated that the project team is comprised of individuals within the appropriate disciplines with suitable levels of experience to complete the proposed project scope, and no concerns were identified. The application ultimately received a 52.5 score at a maximum of 100, therefore surpassing the minimum score of 50. And since the application window was undersubscribed, ranking of applications was not necessary. The historic preservation team also reviewed a submitted construction cost estimate and the proposed schedule and found it to be appropriate based on what the project scope is. And we additionally completed a review of the eligible cost and identified that some items included originally in the eligible cost did not meet the definition under the program. This included things like kitchen cabinets, bathroom accessories, like, you know, closet dividers, that kind of stuff. So some minor adjustments were made to the eligible costs. They were requested by the authority and made by the applicant. The adjustments are only to the eligible costs. They did not reduce the project scope and did not reduce the overall project total cost. And then finally, the underwriting review was completed by the authority, by the underwriting department, and it was found that the applicant demonstrated adequate sources of funding to cover all project costs. They illustrated the ability to meet the minimum 10% equity contribution requirements of the program, and that they show that a funding gap existed. The applicant also provided documentation showing proposed terms for the sale of the historic tax credits at a price of 85 cents on the dollar, which meets the program minimal requirements for the sale of transfer credits. Now we have to answer any questions.
Just, and we talked about this, I think the committee, this is not an Aspire award. This is under the historic property reinvestment
program.
And again, I think since I've been on the board, we haven't had one of these. Is that correct?
It could be one better, other than the first sort of vanilla historic property reinvestment program award period. Kevin, did you do anything? We did one transformative project. This is a transformative category, which is the Lowe's Theater in Jersey City, which is a great project we're thrilled about. This is the first sort of regular approval, which is really exciting. You might say, gosh, we'd like to do more of these. I would agree. I know they do. The governor just signed, I think last week, a bill to kind of strengthen, refresh, what have you, the program. Spare the details. What's in that bill? You'll be seeing some revised rules, program stuff sometime soon, because we would like to get more of this.
We talked that some of the rules are quite restrictive.
Some are quite and can't be changed because they're general. But George?
Yesterday was launched. Yeah. And applications, however, at least one applicant already started filling out an application.
That bill, by the way, to transform, modernize the historic program and the Bradfield program was sponsored by Professor Ruiz and the budget chair in the assembly, so thanks to them for their leadership. Please tell them I said that.
All right, any further questions, comments?
I really like the program. Hopefully more.
Great.
I love all the support for Atlantic City.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes. Good luck. Another item that was on the agenda that will be withdrawn, the authority matter recommendation for contract extension will be withdrawn from this board meeting. Kim, over to you.
Good afternoon. I'll be extremely brief since the afternoon. You have six board memos in your pack for your review. Happy to answer any questions on them. Just note a couple of things. On the community development side, there's tons of reporting in there about the small business activity, the Main Street program that Ty, Christina, Maggie, and others run so well, which is putting supporting thousands of businesses across the state, small businesses across the state, and having a huge impact. But in the spirit of brevity and being over time, I will yield to any questions.
Okay, hearing none. Before we close, again, keeping in the spirit of comments about Atlantic City, our November board meeting is scheduled for Atlantic City. I think it'd be really worthwhile. I know it's for many of people at the Trek, but... some people have made a trek to get here today.
I won't have a huge commute.
But I'm actually personally very excited about going down there. I think we're going to try and spend some time to take a tour and see the fruits of some of our labor. So with that,
can you let the board know about that tour too?
We'll organize this. The board meeting will start a little bit later, and we'll work that out. Any further comments? None?
I was just going to say that the meeting in Atlantic City is on a Monday, November 12th.
And why is it on a Monday?
Thank you for the
legality.
It starts on Tuesday.
Right. So we're trying to do it to make it easy for people who are going to be going to the league
meetings at noon, so as to not make everyone have to get up to
put
the cows.
Yeah, we're still working on details, but we'll be back to everybody. Any further business? Hearing none, can I hear a motion to adjourn?
And Juan Johnson.
Thank you. A second?
Second.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Aye.
Thank you.
Everybody.
Thank you, operator.
Thank you, and that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation in the AT&T teleconference. You may now disconnect.